Today Talk Radio, the home of irreverent, entertaining, and cool talk. We say what we want. You're listening to Kathy Is In with Kathy DeBono, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. How are you? This is Kathy. You know, it wouldn't be my show if something didn't go technically wrong right before we started, right? There it is. Here it is. Wait, I want Deborah to hear our little beginning.
Places, everyone, places!
That's great.
What is wrong with me? There's always some technicality that I do wrong. But you know what? That's just the charm of this show. That's just the way it's going to be.
I like it.
Today, ladies and gentlemen, I have with me musician Deborah Davis. Say hello, Deborah.
Hello.
I'm so excited to have Deborah here. Today is actually the first time I've met Deborah in person. Those of you that who know the show that I did, the series We Have to Stop Now, have heard Deborah's music and know of her stuff from the show. And maybe many of you know of Deborah from elsewhere. But this is how I got to know Deborah. She offered us her really awesome music for free. I mean, she just dove right in, like all of the artists on this show, and offered up her hard work and really made We Have to Stop Now such a better show because of all of you guys. I mean, we had the greatest music ever, I think.
The music is great. The soundtrack's really fun.
I think the soundtrack is like one of the best things about season two.
No, it's great.
It's really awesome. So, okay, if any of you are wondering which music is Deborah's, so many people loved this song. I love this song. This is Moon Upon My Shoulder. I'm just going to have it play a little bit in the background while we chat.
Yeah.
So Deborah and I were just chatting before we started the show. She brought her guitar with her, which makes me so happy. She's going to sing a song for us. I think the first song I'm going to love for Deborah to sing is called Love Is Never Wrong. It is not in We Have to Stop Now. And unless you went ahead and found yourself Deborah's music, after you watched that series, or if you know of her from other stuff, tons of other stuff, then you won't know Love Is Never Wrong. So we have a new exciting song for you to hear from Deborah. And it kind of goes along with our first letter that I'm going to have us read. But first, I just want to ask Deborah a couple of questions. And I'm actually going to tune out your song right now, because if I don't, I'll just want to sing and dance to it. I can't keep my...
Say no more, no more to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. No. What? Tell me about that song. How did you write Moon Upon My Shoulder? What is that about? It's very inspiring,
yeah.
And yet I still don't know what you were afraid of.
You know, it's a totally quirky song, and, you know, it has little metaphors, like the 10-foot people. I thought the 10-foot people would have my hide, and it's kind of in that tribal kind of vein. But it's really just about, you know, that self-talk when you're talking yourself into doubting yourself and talking yourself out of things that you should go for and all that. And then I'm really into the moon and all that stuff, you know? And so I thought, well, one time I was just like looking up and I said, that makes me feel good. You know, it was a full moon. And I thought of that, you know, maybe just so that you have the moon upon your shoulder, just remember that it's there.
Yeah.
And also about just, you know, having a better, conversation with yourself about what you...
I love that. We talk about that a lot on this show, about how our mind is what stands between us and ourselves.
Right.
And you really have to tame it and get it out of the way.
Yeah.
And I think without even knowing the things that you were fearful of when you were, you know, were grabbing your strength and wrote Moon Upon My Shoulder, I think we can all feel that, you know, when we hear that song.
Yeah, it's just general stuff, like everyday things that, you know, it wasn't one thing in particular, but just... The overall, you know.
I love it. It's really inspiring. And the percussion is so catchy.
Isn't that fun?
You just have to play it over and over and over again.
Played all kinds of weird things in that. The wall and the back of a guitar. And there was a cardboard box.
Oh,
And drums. And the drum set. But
so how many musicians were playing in this recording of this version of the song? Because I know you have another version of it.
Yes, on my Angels in the Attic CD, there's another version. In this version, there's definitely at least 8 or 10 players, because we had banjo, there's all kinds of things. And maybe even probably about 8 players. And then we had a bunch of background singers around one mic singing the No Mores.
Oh, fun.
To make it sound like a
Yeah. Well, I've played this version of it before. I've not played the other version. However, I want everyone to stay tuned at the very end of the show. We do something called the Kathy is in 5-minute feature.
Oh, okay.
And Deborah was the 5-minute feature last week with two songs from her CD. I think the songs were Enemy and
cool.
Uninvited Guests.
Oh, neat.
Those were the 5-minute feature last week. But this week, I decided to make Deborah the 5-minute feature at the end of the show again because
Thank
she's
you.
Got so much music that I love. And one of the songs that will be played at the end of the show today is the other version of Moon Upon My Shoulder.
Oh, good. Okay.
Because I wanted to share that. I think it's just such a great tune.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say this not because it matters, but because it matters in the context of our first letter. Deborah is a straight girl, right, Deborah?
I am a straight girl.
Deborah's a straight girl, whom we adore. And I got a letter late last night. I had some letters chosen for today's show that I forwarded on to Deborah so that she could, you know, see what she's getting herself into. And late last night, I got a letter from someone that I thought was really appropriate for us to talk about today because this is a situation I think so many lesbian girls find themselves in where they find themselves in a closet and trying to appease their family by being politely gay.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about this before, like being politely gay where you're sort of out, but then there was this interim in society where it was okay if you were out and you told folks that you were out as long as you were polite about it, meaning you still sort of hid in public. You didn't mm-hmm. hold your girlfriend's hand. You didn't, quote, put it in people's faces.
Right.
You know, your girlfriend wasn't coming home with you for Thanksgiving as long as you were polite and didn't make your parents talk about it and you pretended that that part of your life didn't exist.
Yeah.
It was okay if you were out about it. So I got a letter about this last night, so I thought we might start with that one because I think it applies to so many people's experience. And it's a little bit long, but I decided to read all of it because I think it's pertinent. Okay, so here it goes. This is from someone named Ray. My name is Ray. I'm 29, and I started watching your WYP blog, that's What's Your Problem, video blog, while I was recovering from ACL surgery. That's anterior cruciate ligament.
Oh,
it's in your knee.
What that was. Okay.
It's a big deal. I had that surgery. It's super duper painful. So I'm with you, sister.
I was reading that on my iPhone because my internet isn't working, and I thought it said AOL surgery. And I thought, that's what I need.
I think a lot of people need AOL surgery.
Yeah.
Anyway. I wanted to thank you because the advice and encouragement you give helped me come out to my parents. Growing up, I remember they would make derogatory comments about homosexuals. My dad may see an effeminate man and say, quote, look at that damn fag, or see a butch woman and call her a dyke. My Bible-thumping, homophobic troll of a mother. Now, that's a throwback reference to We Have to Stop Now, if anyone watches the show. I appreciated that. That was a line stolen from the show, but apparently it fits her mom. My Bible-thumping, homophobic troll of a mother will quote the same tired Bible verses. Growing up, I was a tomboy. During middle school and high school, I began to spend more time with girls and dressing in boys' clothing. My parents asked me if I was gay a few times, but I would lie and say no and tell them all the girls who called the house were just friends. Their reply was good, because we won't allow that boop in our mm-hmm. house. I would say it, but I know that we're on WBLQ 1230 AM out in Rhode Island, and they don't like those words.
Yeah.
during college, I dated a girl for 2 years who I was madly in love with. She wanted me to come out to my folks. She was very supportive and patient. I told her my fears about my folks kicking me out of the house or not paying my tuition. She told me that if I were kicked out of the house, I could live with her, but I still was hesitant. Eventually, she gave me an ultimatum to come out and be with her or stay in the closet and get my degree. Regretfully, I chose to stay in school. I waited until I graduated college and got my own place before I came out, but it still took me a while to tell my parents. After I came out to my parents, their response was, duh, we've known since you were 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I got so pissed in that moment that they knew I was gay and never said a word. I wouldn't expect them to join PFLAG, but they could have told me they knew, and that even though they don't agree with homosexuality, that they still love me. They had no qualms about me lying to their faces. Instead, they let me stay in the glass closet, watched me struggle through being miserable and uncomfortable in my own skin, and sacrifice my relationships. I asked them why they didn't say anything, but all I got was silence and a shoulder shrug. Since coming out, my dad has apologized for his comments about homosexuals and says he still loves me and accepts me no matter what. My mom, on the other hand, says she loves me but doesn't accept my being gay. She says it's a sin and that I'll have to answer to God. She also told me that my girlfriend would not be welcomed in their house. She is in denial that I'm a lesbian. She'll buy me dresses and blouses for job interviews, and if there's a family function, she'll call to make sure I wear something, quote, appropriate. AKA nothing that makes me look like a dyke that I am. Oh, she doesn't want her to dress like herself. Okay.
No.
I don't know how to get it through to my mother that I'm super gay. Clearly it's going to take time for her to come around. Hopefully. I really hope you get a chance to read this email, and it would be so awesome if you can give me any advice or help with my mom. Thank you, Ray.
Wow.
That was a mouthful.
Yeah, but...
And that was quite a lot. Are you having any initial thoughts right off the bat, Deborah?
Well, I mean, I haven't been there myself, obviously, but I have some good friends who went through pretty much that, you know? I mean, and luckily, with one of my friends, I mean, they have kids now, and she's been with her partner for a long time, and she finally came out to her parents, and it's okay, you know, mm-hmm. they can visit and everything, but it took a while. You know, in the beginning, it was major denial, she said, and all that. And then I have another friend who her parents basically excommunicated them, you know, but eventually came around.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I don't know if that's always the case, but.
Yeah, it's common for it to take a while. I have what I consider now fortunate. That experience. At the time, I did not feel fortunate. It was very stressful mm-hmm. and very scary. And I think going through that time with my family and with my parents served all of us to grow and expand and enjoy mm-hmm. each other better because we had to. But that's if you're committed to hanging in there with each other. And it sounds like Ray's family is committed mm-hmm. to hanging in there with each other. I mean, she says they made these derogatory remarks, her dad in particular, and as soon as he found out she was gay, he kind of said, okay, well, look, I love you. I'm sorry I said those things.
That's good.
That's really good. I mean, this happens for a lot of people when they realize, you know, they hate and they have ignorance about things they don't understand, and mm-hmm. so they fear it and hate it and judge it
until
they realize it's someone they love.
Mm-hmm.
And then it opens their mind to thinking about it in different ways. That's why we say it's so important to come out so that the people who know you will have the opportunity to realize that gay people are just people.
Right.
With the same loves, desires, fears, hopes, dreams as everybody else. It's the ignorance that really keeps us separate from each other. So I think your dad is a classic case of that. It's a classic case of him waking up and going, oh, that's my daughter. Okay, well, maybe I need to look at this and understand it a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom clearly sounds committed to her religion, and it sounds like she gets all of her information from her Bible and from her interpretations of the Bible.
I should say.
Well,
I don't see that in there anywhere.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean, we'll hear a lot of different takes on that. What's your take about it in what the Bible thinks of homosexuality?
I don't think the Bible should be taken literally, period, you know? And that, isn't that what people are pulling from? Isn't that in the Old Testament anyway?
I'm not really sure.
I'm not
a huge Bible scholar.
I'm not either, obviously. But, I mean, I just can't even believe, you know, everybody, I mean, God, you believe in God, and it's love. God is, to me, is the energy of love. And how could that be judgmental? And, you know, it's the same way with race and everything else. Any place where people have prejudices and they try to justify it with the Bible.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy.
Yeah. How does that happen? How can people use God in the name of hate, love, hate, judgment, and exoneration?
Exactly.
It goes directly against spirituality. It doesn't make any sense. And so, advice to help you with your mom. I don't know how open your mom is to perceiving the Bible through a different perspective. I've not heard that you have to abandon your religion, even Catholicism, in order to embrace homosexuality. It's all about perspective.
Right.
So I don't know that your mom has to abandon her religion in order to embrace you and your sexuality and your life in a full way. But This does anger me when I think about the glass closet, because it falls right in line also with my thoughts on the word tolerance. I think tolerance was something we needed at the get-go because it's the very first step towards stopping violence and stopping oppression and stopping bad things from happening. If there's tolerance, at least there will be a moment where things stop. But beyond tolerance needs to be acceptance. Because when you think about the word tolerate, it really doesn't sound very positive.
It sounds like, I'll tolerate you.
But. Yeah, I'll tolerate you. You know, I actually had a moment where I was at someone's wedding and the man meant perfectly well. I know what his intention was. So we didn't have to have an argument about it. But I was sitting with my girlfriend and he said he wanted to let us know that he appreciated the relationship we were having in front of him and he supported it. And he was, I saw what his intention was. And he was like, I'm very tolerant of this.
Right.
And I know what he meant.
He meant well,
but I had to take a moment to tell him that that word kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And he was open to that.
Yeah.
But this is, I think, how the glass closet was built. I think the glass closet happened because of tolerance. I think everyone's first step was to decide that we can be out and we can exist. However, we just have to pretend we don't exist. We have to sort of pretend our girlfriends don't exist, our relationships don't exist. Don't expect the same respect. Don't expect the same acceptance in terms of our everyday lives and rituals, like Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas, etc. I don't blame you for being upset for your parents knowing you were having this sort of struggle and not reaching out to you. At the same time, they would have had no idea how to do that.
Right.
I mean, I think the fact that they didn't say anything to you, they didn't exonerate you, they just tried to exist without talking about it, happens a lot. And I would encourage those of you who are out there in that situation to make it more of a verbal, tangible thing in your life and ease your family and your friends into it in a more tangible way. Stop accepting tolerance and low levels of acceptance as enough. I mean, I think we can appreciate it for how long it had been enough, but it's not enough anymore.
Right.
Yeah. And it's time to move forward. And just to go back and comment on the girlfriend that you had who gave you an ultimatum, I have mixed feelings about that. I understand her position of not wanting to be in a relationship that was in the closet. I understand her position of wanting to live an open, loving life and wanting you to tell your family. I don't support her giving you an ultimatum. I think that's kind of crappy.
Yeah, all ultimatums are crappy.
It's kind of crappy, especially when, you know, I would love to say, yes, we all need to put our cape on and come out and suffer all the consequences. But that, you know what? I would not advise that. If your parents are paying for your college and you think telling them you're gay is going to make them stop, then be strategic about that. I mean, you've got to take care of yourself.
Right.
And I think you made the right decision at the time based on what you knew, which was you thought you'd lose your family. But I do want to encourage people to challenge that because more often than not, you're not going to lose your family. More often than not, you're going to go through a really hard transition, but you've got to hold your ground and allow your parents to learn about their fears through loving you.
Right. And if when she sees them, she's positive and just positive, you know, sure of herself and shows up as herself and is happy in that, that's contagious. You know, they'll love her more because they'll respect her more, I think.
That's right.
I think so.
That's absolutely right. If they see your fear about it, your shame about it, it's not going to allow them to question if they're right or wrong about what they believe. They're just going to see their child fearful and in shame, and they're going to try to get you away from the thing they think is creating that.
Right. Yeah.
And they think the thing that's creating that is your sexuality, when truthfully, it's your relationship to them around your sexuality. So stay strong, give them something positive that they can see in you that they can learn from, and stay patient. I think that's really important. Stay patient. But at this time, can we hear you play a song?
Sure.
I'm so excited. Deborah has this cool song called Love Is Never Wrong, and I think this is a really good time to play it.
I do too. Yes. it's all about kind of my experience with that. Well, hopefully you'll be able to tell from the lyrics.
Yeah, give us a little tiny intro to how you wrote this song, and then we'll listen to the story.
Okay. This was actually elementary. Well, no, it was junior high, but I'm going to say sixth grade going into junior high. That I don't remember. Maybe sixth, seventh grade. Anyway, and there was just a friend of mine, and we had been good friends since we were kids, you know. And then she was gay, but she, I don't even think she really knew it yet. You know what I mean? Or knew what to call it, or her feelings. You know what I mean? And she was interested in me. And then I started to realize what was going on and, you know, told her, I don't really feel that way. But we remained friends and grew together. I mean, there was a rough period, but it actually was a really good lesson, first lesson in acceptance and on both of our parts.
Wow, and such a young age.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Here's Deborah Davis with Love Is Never Wrong, live.
It was hot outside and the way we felt, saints would hide and sinners would spell out all over the sky till our bodies would melt. Makeup ran like water, skin like cream. 12 years old at impossible dreams. Everybody told us girls can love, but not like that. The days they just grew hotter. Well, for me, it was curiosity like a lover. In high school, my attraction swayed. Roxanne said, it's only a phase. I'm wearing the cloak society made. She could pull the cover. Well, for me, it was curiosity. Roxanne, as she felt more and hold of me. And I say, love is, love is a love. Love is never wrong. How could love be wrong? Well, you are, he is, I am, she is, just trying to belong. Well, don't you know that passion comes in many colors? Paint your doorway, walk on through. Maybe we cannot be lovers, but if your aim is true, love finds you. Oh, she went her way, I went mine. There is no deeper friend I'll find. Someone who would walk the line, no matter what they might say. I see us both in 50 years. We share our souls over a couple of beers. Remember how we traveled here and know we went the right way. Well, for me, it was curiosity. Roxanne, I'm so much more for you than me. And I say love is, love is, love is a love. Love is never wrong. How could love be wrong? Well, you are, he is, I am, she is, just trying to belong. Well, aren't we just trying to belong? Oh, my love is never, never, never wrong. No, not my love. No, not your love. Never, never wrong.
How beautiful is that? That's so gorgeous. If you guys want to call in and have a question for me or Deborah, or want to comment on what we're talking about, the number is 818-602-4929. I will not answer the phone when we're playing music. So don't call if you hear a song playing, or call towards the end of the song, and we will definitely pick it up and let you have your two cents, let you ask your questions. 818-602-4929. What a great song.
Thanks.
To have from the perspective of the straight girl that had the lesbian friend who fell in love with her. Because we've heard so many lesbian musicians who sang their song of that story from their perspective.
Right.
You know, what it's like to fall in love with your best girlfriend, and what do you do about it, and how do you approach it, and how do you stay friends, and, and deal with that pain inside. And what a beautiful gift to your friend that you were able to appreciate it and write a song like that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I love doing that tune because I feel it always affects somebody.
Yeah.
Live, that's in the audience, and I think, you know.
Did you write that as a child?
No, I wrote that, you know, for my first CD.
Okay.
So I was an adult.
You were an adult. But were you still friends with Roxanne? Is that her real name?
That's her real name. Yeah. I haven't seen her in a while, but it's really funny because a good friend of mine who's from the same school and everything, who is also straight, comes to my shows a lot. And the first time she came and I played that song, she goes, "Everybody thinks I'm Roxanne." It was so funny. Because she had like said, "I'm her best friend," and all this. It was so funny.
Oh,
and
my
I said,
God,
"It's okay."
That's okay. Very cute.
Yeah. But I haven't seen her in years, which is, you know, kind
Has
of a bummer.
Has she heard the song? Does she know it?
I don't know. I mean, I had when it came out, I had lost touch with her completely. But I talked to somebody who did know where she was, but not like a phone number or email or anything.
Oh, she's got to hear it.
I know. I hope she has. You know what I mean? Maybe
yeah.
she has, because it. I have my. I mean, this is my real name, Deborah Davis.
Yeah.
It's my.
I can't imagine she wouldn't have contacted you.
I know, you'd think. Huh?
Yeah. Unless she's still pining.
Oh, wow. Well, I hope not.
Yeah, hopefully she's got a love of her life now, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that was, I loved it. So
Thank
freaking
you.
Cute. Okay. Well, here's a song that's about friendship. I mean, not a song. I'm sorry. I'm not going to sing, folks. Don't worry. Don't run away. Don't turn off the radio. Good Lord. No, here's a letter from a girl who is having an issue with her friend, who's her platonic friend. It's a straight friend of hers. And they have a close relationship and she's having some trouble. So we're going to read a letter from this girl. Let me see. Can I say your name? Let me take a look here. Yes, I can. Your name is Mel and we're going to read your letter right now. Dear Kathy, over the last 3 months, I have met and fallen deeply in love with a woman who is now my girlfriend. For the last year, however, I have been living platonically with my best friend who is a straight girl and her twin children who are age 3. 2 months ago, her boyfriend moved in, kinda without my permission, into our two-bedroom apartment. He's gun-happy, and I have seen him hand a purportedly empty 9mm handgun to the boy twin whilst I was sitting right there. He's unstable. My best friend has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder until very recently was medicated and doing fine. Over the last month or so, she has stopped taking her medication. I'm in the process of moving into my own new apartment because the living situation is too crowded with 3 adults and 2 kids in a two-bedroom apartment. My best friend is angry at me for leaving, and I think angry at me for falling in love and coupling with my new girlfriend. I am moving in a week. My best friend has freaked out all over me, all over text messages, such that I do not feel safe staying in the apartment with her and the guns and her crazy boyfriend. I have stayed over at my girlfriend's house the last few nights and will do so for the remainder of my time until moving day. But how do, and moreover, should I even try to, save the friendship with my best friend? All of this hurts my heart, and I'm not sure how to proceed. Mel. Mm. That's a lot.
Wow.
That's a lot. Are you having any initial...
Well, just, thoughts? I'm so anti-guns that...
Yeah,
that
are
keeps
you?
Popping, that image keeps popping in my head of... You know, giving the gun to the...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, definitely it's worth, you know, trying to save the friendship, but she should
I think there's a lot of... This is kind of a layered issue, right? I mean, first, I hate to like, make this not be about you, because I know you wrote in for help for yourself, but let's talk about the crisis happening, which is 2 3-year-old kids mm-hmm. living in an apartment with 2 adults... one of them unmedicated and bipolar, and I don't know what the other one's issue is, but it's something.
Yeah.
I mean, to hand a 3-year-old a gun. And look, I don't want to be like overly offended by things and, you know, grab my pearls for everything that I hear, but, mm-hmm. Maybe the gun was empty and we don't want to villainize him. Maybe he knew exactly what he was doing and I don't know. Maybe he's teaching his child how to be safe with guns by getting him used to what it looks like. I don't know. I'm trying to be devil's advocate right now. Yeah. You should see Deborah's face. She's making a face like, are you insane?
Yeah, if you show something to a little kid and say, don't touch this, that's
right.
Exactly what they want to do is touch that.
Right, exactly. So. Well, and he actually didn't do that, right? I mean, he handed it to him.
Yeah.
So that's kind of letting the kid know he can touch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What am I saying? I'm trying too hard to be devil's advocate right now. No, it's a bad idea to hand a child a 9mm gun. And I was just talking about this with my girlfriend yesterday because we're moving from Hollywood, where our building is fairly secure and there's bars all over everything, to a house in North Hollywood, mm-hmm. where now we're out in the suburbs. There's no bars on anything. And we're talking about the different ways we need to now secure ourselves there. And she wants to get a gun. So we've been talking a lot about we have to take lessons, make sure we know how to handle it properly, what kind of gun. And her point was she wants a revolver because she can open it and see very clearly that it's empty. With a 9mm, you put the magazine in, and as soon as you cock it, the bullet goes in the chamber. There's no way to get that bullet out of the chamber until you shoot the gun.
Oh.
So we were just talking about this.
Yeah.
So I don't know how he can definitely know that that gun was empty. So first and foremost, this is what I want to kind of encourage you to do. I want you to call CPS, Child Protective Services, in your local town, wherever that might be. Now, don't be afraid that they're going to find out that this is you and that you're going to be retaliated against. CPS takes calls completely anonymously for that reason. They want the protection of the children to be number one, and they don't want people to be fearful that they can't call in to protect a child from stuff like this because there's going to be retaliation.
Right.
So you will be held completely anonymous. But I would call CPS and give them their names, your address of where they're living, and that you saw him handing guns to a three-year-old. I would also tell them that their mom is bipolar and not medicated, and that you would like to see her get helped by someone who is a professional and in an position of authority who can kind of, put a mirror in front of her face of reality here. These are your kids. You're going to lose them. You need to be medicated and treated if you're bipolar because listen, when you're bipolar, your judgment goes out the window, and you just have to do whatever it takes to make sure you are the best mom for your children,
mm-hmm.
and to make sure that they are safe. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, for yourself, I think you're doing exactly the right thing. I think you're packing up, you're getting out of a situation where it seems like you have very little control, and I want to encourage you to stay open with your friend about how you feel about her not being medicated, how you want the best for her, how you love her. Just really be open about what your fears are in losing her and talk to her about her fears of you falling in love and finding a partner. She's probably afraid she's going to lose you as a friend. This happens between friends when one starts dating or they finally get a new intimate partner. They feel the loss of that energy and attention that they were getting from their mm-hmm. best friend, right?
Yeah.
And just have a talk with her about that. Assure her that she's not going to lose you in that way. Do you have anything to add to all of my babbling?
Just that you guys should just get a big dog.
Oh, me and Jill?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I have a dog. Her name is Comet. She will bark and scare people, but really when push comes to shove, she runs behind me.
Oh, she does. Because my stepbrother was a cop, and he said, I've gone on a bazillion calls. He said, and really, the biggest deterrent is a dog, because mm-hmm. nobody wants their leg torn open. They'll go to the next house.
Right, exactly.
Because when they hear like a big dog bark. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, she's got that persona. No, great idea. She's got that persona. She's got that attitude.
Well, they might not know that she wouldn't follow through.
I know. Maybe I shouldn't broadcast it on the radio.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Probably not a good idea.
Anyway, no, I agree with everything you said. Yeah, I mean, all she can do is just, to tell her friend how important it is to her. But also step in there, like you said, about the medication, because mm-hmm. that's a volatile situation
to have bipolar,
no medication, and a gun.
Yeah, yeah, that's really important. We have a phone call. Let's see what someone has to tell us or ask us. Hi, you're on the air with Kathy and my guest, Deborah Davis.
Hi there. You just read my letter.
Oh, I did. Hey,
did
I give you a password so that I know it's you?
You did. It's like egg salad.
That's right.
That's great.
I know.
It's a crazy password.
It is. It's funny. So talk to me. What's going on?
Well, I've moved now, thank God. But I don't know. It is really scary. I actually had something develop since I sent this letter, which is a friend of mine I told about the gun situation, and she is a mandatory reporter, so she can anonymously do that for me.
Fantastic. So she's getting that done for you.
Yeah, she is. But, I mean, I don't even want to tell these guys where I live now, because they're a little crazy, and it's freaky. But I mostly feel like I was co-parenting those kids, and I feel like I'm abandoning them, which is really hard.
Right.
Too,
And I'm sure that you were being a level-headed, and, I don't know if you're diagnosed with anything or if you're on any medication, but being a level-headed adult in the house, I bet you were. I bet you were co-parenting those children. So you want to make sure you put something in place that's going to, oversee their care since you have to get out of there. Because I think you're doing the right thing for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, I feel better now that I'm leaving, but I mean, now that I'm gone, you know. But I mean, I'm also really, really angry. Actually, it just kind of occurred to me in the grocery store yesterday that I'm just really, really angry about the whole situation. So I don't know how to do that. But I don't even know if I should retain the friendship because it's just a whole lot of drama, which is really not my thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you want to. There's a little crisis happening on a couple of levels. There's the crisis with your friend being mentally ill and not being treated. There's the crisis with her boyfriend. I don't know what his crisis is, but you don't hand a gun to a 3-year-old.
I can tell you what it is. It's narcissism.
Well, yeah. And who knows what other diagnoses he may have going on. You know, that goes with that. So it sounds like there's a few crises and a few volatile situations that would make you feel like you just want to get out of there. But do see what you can do about helping your friend get back on her medication and about making sure those kids have someone looking out for what's going on. Because right now you're the only level-headed adult that knows what's going on.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
All right, well, thanks for calling in, Mel. Do you have another question?
All right. Nope, that's it. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. That's a hard situation when you feel like you got to get out of there, but you feel like you're leaving kids behind.
Right.
I think a lot of wives find themselves in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
You have a little girl.
I do. She's 8, third grade. Ella.
Oh. And apparently she sings like a little angel, just like her mom.
She does. Little theater. And she was great. Yeah. She's really talented and she loves it. And in fact, she was Queen Elizabeth for Halloween because she wanted to be able to talk in a British accent, she said.
Oh my God, do you have your hands full?
Yeah, she's the drama.
Third grade and she was the Queen of England.
Yeah.
That
I said, tell everyone you're the Queen Mum.
That
she
is
goes,
hilarious.
But I knew her when she was young. She didn't want to be her now because I showed her a picture. She goes, well, was she young once? And I said, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
I know. It was cute.
Oh, she's going to be a little character, huh?
Oh, yeah. And she only likes old Broadway musicals. She named our new dog we rescued Mitzi Gaynor. That's our new dog's name.
That is adorable.
It is funny.
So what do you think? Should we do another song?
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
Play?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll do Uninvited Guests. That's a favorite.
All right, cool. What can you tell us about
fans.
It?
This one I wrote, this is a title track to my first CD, so I wrote it a while ago, but my husband is a drummer, and he tours around playing for famous people. He toured and recorded with Melissa Etheridge for years.
Cool.
Her Your Little Secret album, and then the other one, well, anyway, all that. Mid-90s, yeah.
What's your husband's name?
Dave Beyer.
Oh, okay. Because I met those guys. I met met Melissa's band when she was doing the Yes I Am tour.
Yeah, he was on that tour.
John Shanks and Melissa.
No,
and
Mark Brown.
Mark Brown.
In fact, Mark is at our house now recording.
Really?
Yeah, they're still really close.
God, what a small world.
Together.
And Dave Beyer, what does he play?
Drums.
The drums. Yeah, I met him for like 2 seconds.
I'm sure you did.
And I'm sure we wouldn't know each other if we tripped over each other, but I'm sure I met him. What a small world.
Yeah, it's wild. And now he plays, he's, you know, since then done, you know, the Motels and Michael McDonald, and he's with Christopher Cross now a lot, and Wilson Phillips.
Oh, how cool.
A lot of classic rock stuff, but he's on tour pretty much constantly, which is extra hard when you have a child and two dogs.
Yeah, I
and
bet.
A career of my own.
Yeah. Do you guys play together?
We do. He plays with me when he's in town and, you know, whenever we can. And then...
Well, I want to see you guys live.
This weekend.
Oh, really? I can't. I'm moving this weekend.
Oh. Well, I'm playing the gay... what's it called? No, Palm Springs Pride.
Oh, yeah. Tell us what's the date is where they can...
November 5th, I play at 11 a.m. on the main stage, though. And it's, I don't know the address of where it is, but you can't miss it. I guess
so it's Mimosas and Deborah Davis
at
11 a.m. on November 5th. And DeborahDavis.com, it's DeborahDavis.com. And you can always find her on my website, Kathy is in. If you just go to the guests and artists, she's got a page there, too. It'll... have a link to her website if you forget how to spell her name. Okay, so let's hear Uninvited Guests.
So this is about Dave, us being apart.
Okay.
The whole thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a love song.
A love song.
Loneliness, get out of my bed. This ain't the pillow where you lay your head. He still lives here, I just can't make him stay. Well, move over, run away. 'Cause I can't get no rest with these feelings dropping in like uninvited guests. And my moon rises when your sun sets. Until you're home again, I just can't get no rest. Oh, oh, self-pity, hear you ringing my bell. I don't want anything that you have to sell. Let you in and you're the last one to leave. But I could use some company. Oh, and I can't get no rest with these feelings dropping in like uninvited guests. And my moon rises when your sun sets. Until you're home again, I just can't get no happiness. I'm flirting with suspicion, dance with my confession, but love keeps cutting in. All alone, just starving for affection, home without protection, and these feelings dropping in. Oh, temptation on my window pane, you call my lonely heart to come out and play. Lift the glass and you will shatter my dreams. So fly away and let me be. Oh, oh, fly away and let me be. 'Cause I can't get no rest with these feelings dropping in. Uninvited guests. And my moon rises when your sun sets. Until you're home again, I just can't get no. I just can't get no rain.
Beautiful. I love your voice.
Thank you.
I love it.
Little morning voice.
You just sort of, you can sort of ride it like a wave.
Oh, thanks.
It's just so beautiful. Thank you for that.
Thank you for letting me play it.
Did your hubby just want to cry when he heard that song?
He does get a little weepy.
Yeah, he's a musician. He must.
And there's songs that I started, you know, about him. And then we had our daughter Ella. Uh-huh. And in that course of, you know, a year, I finish them. And then when I introduce a couple of them, I say that I wrote this about our daughter, Ella. And he goes, I thought that was about me. And I said, well, it started out about you. And then she took over.
Yeah. Isn't that what happens to husbands?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It starts out about them. And then there's a baby.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Okay, we have time for one quick last letter. And I'm going to address this one. This is, we talked about ADHD and OCD last week. Attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, as well as obsessive compulsive disorder. We have another question from Sydney. My name is Sydney, but everyone I know calls me Sid. I'm 20 years old. I'm in a bit of a conflict with myself. When I was about 8 or 9 years old, I was diagnosed with ADHD, and my parents refused to put me on any medication and put me in sports and other extracurricular activities until I graduated high school. I still have ADHD, but I still won't take anything for it. But since a couple of years ago, when I moved home and went off to college, I have also inherited OCD from one of my moms. She has OCD, and so I know how to identify it, but I don't know how to control the things that I do. So I have the conflict of my OCD fighting with my ADHD, and I'm driving my friends, especially my best friend, because we live together, and family, a little crazy with my organized madness. Would you have any suggestions on how I can control / deal with this conflict of mine? Thank you very much, Sid.
Wow.
First of all, I think the combination of ADHD and OCD makes a great comedy.
Yeah, I was going to say. It's like, it's Monk, but then you, do you ever watch that show?
Yes.
I love that show.
Yeah. It's like the combination of me and my partner. I'm the ADHD and she's the OCD. But here's why I don't think it's uncommon for people to experience both. When you have ADD or ADHD and it's untreated, it causes a lot of anxiety. And OCD is driven by anxiety. So here's the way I want you to think about it. You used the words inherited. You didn't tell me who your biological parent was. You can inherit things biologically. You can also inherit things via nurture by just being around someone. You inherit their accent. You inherit their behaviors. You inherit the way they think about the world. And I don't know how much of your OCD was learned behavior or how much of it is actual chemistry for you. Some people, it is just chemistry. They need to be medicated, and that is the way it is for them. For some people, it is a learned behavior that can sort of just be, you can use cognitive behavioral therapy to get control of it, and you don't need to be medicated. I want you to think about it in terms of this. When you have ADHD, your frontal lobe of your brain is not active enough. So you're constantly looking for stimulation. And this is why giving a stimulant to someone with ADHD actually calms them down. Because if you look at your window of tolerance for dopamine, which is what you need in your frontal lobe, if you are below having enough dopamine, you will be anxious because you will be running around looking for stimulation and you won't be able to pay attention to things. If you are above and have too much dopamine, you will be anxious because you will have too much stimulant in your body. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you are ADHD, I want you to consider medication, and I'll tell you why. I didn't get medicated until I was 31 years old, and it was like a huge relief. And it's medication that you can take on an as-needed basis. You don't need to take it every single day. And there's different kinds of medication. If you're not into taking an amphetamine, if that scares you, it's usually a very low-dose amphetamine. And if that scares you, there's other ADHD drugs now that are not stimulant-based that you can look into. I would treat that first and then see how your OCD symptoms are affected by that, because I think once you treat the anxiety, and something like ADHD does get worse when we have a life change, because all of a sudden we're taking on a bunch of new variables. So now we're in college. Now we have a bunch of things that we need to organize. Now everything's different. And that anxiety can really shoot through the roof, because with ADD, it's very hard to manage a bunch of variables when you're not being helped with some treatment. Yeah. So I would encourage you to look into that. I don't know if you have anything to add to any of that, Deborah.
Wow. No, but I learned a lot, because I didn't know, I didn't know that about the taking a stimulant to help. I would think the opposite, you
right.
know, because I feel like you can't, if you can't focus.
Exactly.
But it totally makes sense, because I do am familiar with the fact that the OCD is, that anxiety kind of exacerbates it, right?
Absolutely. The OCD symptoms, our OCD symptoms, if we have them, are exacerbated by our anxiety that we need to be able to control. And we start to try to control that anxiety.
Right.
And so we end up developing compulsive behaviors.
Yeah.
You know, if I touch the doorknob 3 more times, I won't die. And lots of times this causes even more distress because the person with the OCD realizes this isn't a logical thought, but they can't sort of help themselves but to try to control the anxiety. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make a really, really, just my assessment of your short little note is that maybe if you treat your ADD symptoms, you're going to see a big change in your OCD symptoms. So there you have it.
Makes sense.
Makes sense. Deborah, tell us again where everyone can find you.
DeborahDavis.com. I'm actually, my website is being redesigned now, but it's up. And you can get my CDs or individual songs on iTunes, Amazon.com, CDBaby.com, and soon in a couple weeks on Pandora, too.
Awesome.
Really? I just got notice from them that they accepted my music and it would be up, but it takes a while to get up there. But anyway, at the website, and and you can get, you know, our gig dates and what's happening with songs in TV and whatever, you know, all that's there.
That's awesome. Deborah, thank you for being here. Would you like to come back sometime?
I would love it.
Would be great. I'd love to have you. Maybe we can have you and Mark come in and like do something together. I don't
That'd
know if
be
he'd be into that, but that would be fun.
Totally.
Yeah. Or Ella. Maybe Ella wants to come sing something.
She would love that. She said, so while I'm at school today, you're going to be on the radio. She was so into that. She couldn't believe it.
Things happen when we're in school. Okay, I just want to take a minute to thank my sponsors, Blagaspot.com, LuckyDogLeather.com, WeHaveToStopNow.tv, and DiscoverSuite.com. I want to thank Deborah Davis for being here. If you are listening to us on LA Talk Radio, this is where we say goodbye. If you are listening to us on TransformationTalkRadio.com, or WBLQ 1230 AM out in Rhode Island, please stay tuned for the last 10 minutes. You're going to hear the 5-minute feature for some more Deborah Davis music. And one of those is the alternate version of Moon Upon My Shoulder, which I also really dig. I will be back again next week on Tuesday, November 8th, with actress Taya Gill. So come back. And if you want to send a letter that you'd like to hear read on the show, send it to kathyisin@gmail.com. That's Kathy with a C. And please put radio letter in the subject line. Please visit me at kathyisin.com for any more information that you might possibly want. And have a great day.
And now, the Kathy is In 5-Minute Feature.
Musician Deborah Davis.
Change my clothes, my hair, and my name. Well, you can't.